Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. Well, last week, Peter Brackney joined me. He's an attorney and a history buff, and we talked about the oldest home in Nicholasville, which still stands, that was owned by Reverend John Metcalf, who laid out our town. Today, we got Peter back, and we're going to talk about what was the second oldest house in town. It's gone now, but it had a great history, and it had a tie to English royalty. We'll talk to Peter about that and more after this.
Do you have a community event that could benefit from the exposure of Jess FM? Well, let us know about it because our free public service announcements are part of our mission to help serve the Jessamine County community. Email the event details to will@jessfm.com. That's will@jessfm.com. It's just that simple. Let Jess FM have an impact on your event's success. We are Jessamine County's hometown radio station, 105.9 Jess FM.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you along on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn about people, places, and things of our county. Last week, we talked to Peter Brackney about the oldest house in Nicholasville and its occupant, Reverend Metcalf. Well, we wanted to talk about some other things, and because of time, weren't able to, so he came back today, and we're going to talk a little more about some history in Nicholasville. It was interesting, Peter, we were talking about it being the, if you will, first house, oldest house, right. Whatever you want to call it. I found in our Jessamine County book that was published back several years ago some of the first in Jessamine County, and it's pretty interesting if you look at some of the things that happened and when it happened. People, you may have read the Jessamine Journal. You may not realize that it was first published in 1872, so probably, as far as I know, the longest continuous business in the Nicholasville city corporate limits.
Within the city. Of course, last week we talked about Valley View Ferry,
right,
which of course is a county
for the whole state.
For the whole state, but Nicholasville's Jessamine Journal is a long-standing institution.
1872. The first and only fort that was built in the county was built by Levi Todd near Keene in 1779. I'm assuming of Indians, I guess, as far as I know. Benjamin Netherland, who we mentioned last week, was our first postmaster. He built the first racetrack for horses down around Suffer Well back in the late 1700s. The first circuit court was held in 1803. The first paper mill was down at Glass's Mill, Thomas Bryan, in 1837. And here's something that's very interesting, and I'm sure you know about this, and it's something that a lot of people don't realize, but the first all-woman jury in the United States was in November 1920 Circuit Court in Jessamine County, and Judge W.J. Baxter was the judge, and Mary Welch, Nora Simpson, Ella Lunsford, Laura McDowell, Irene Lowry, Miss Lynn Goss, Leela Cannon Harmon, Ida Duncan, Miss Thornton Lowry, Miss Harry McGee, Eliza Watts, and Ruth Curd Askins all pulled first woman jury.
That is a fact I did not know.
In fact,
that's,
we have a picture of that. You'll have to remind me.
And
I'm trying to think. I think it's over in the courthouse, maybe in the courtroom. It's very interesting.
What year was that, Doug?
That was in 1920.
Same year women got the right to vote.
There you go.
Wow.
And that's probably what caused it. But anyway, some interesting firsts. So,
one more first.
Yeah?
One more first. Don't forget the first celebration of the 4th of July, Independence Day.
Yeah.
Was here in Jessamine County off Clear Creek Road.
And that was first. In the country. In the country.
Yeah, 1794,
yeah.
Colonel William Price's farm. He had some old friends gather for a celebration.
Interesting things. The first, we've done a show on this, the first commercial vineyard in the United States was right here in Jessamine County. And on that particular place right now is First Vineyard and Tom Bell down there. So a lot of history in Jessamine County. A lot of things happen here. All right, we talked about last week the Metcalf House being the oldest house in the community that still stands. And up until about 14 years ago, there was another house, the second oldest, that unfortunately we lost to a fire. It was located in what is now an empty lot behind the United Bank. Now, tell us a little bit of the history of what you know about the house, and then, and more, I guess, importantly, is the connection to what we would call royalty.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the house was on lot 104, if you look at the old 1802 survey of Nicholasville. It was built in 1804 to kind of set the scene. Thomas Jefferson was the president. Louisiana Purchase had just been completed. And Christopher Greenup was elected that year as the governor of Kentucky.
Which has a county named
Greenup
after
County,
him.
Greenup County, yes.
So I'm assuming there that since 1904, there was a period of about 6 years where we know between Metcalf And between, well, actually, more. What did we say Metcalf was? Was it 1798?
Again, the PVA records, I think, said 1791. Other records say 1798. So,
well, somewhere
in there.
There's a period of time there where there had to be houses built between that one and this one.
That's right.
What that tells you is, folks, up until 2004, all of those places are gone.
2014.
I'm sorry,
yep.
I said four. I guess I misquoted how long it's been. I said 13, 14 years. It's only been three.
Right.
Yeah. But the houses that were built, the buildings that were built, as far as we know, between Metcalf and this one, were gone.
Yeah.
When this one burned down.
As best we can tell.
As
best we can tell.
Yeah. Okay.
So this house on lot 104, it was at that point, again, roads had different names. Today we call it First and Walnut Street. Then it would have been West and North Cross Street.
Right.
Because it was north of Cross Street, which Cross Street is now Maple Street. Mm-hmm. So it was there at First and Walnut, as we'd say now. And fast forward from 1804, when the house was constructed, to 1839. The log cabin was rented out to a young Englishman by the name of Ross Hughes and his wife. Mr. Hughes was a stagecoach driver. Would have operated a little stagecoach here and drove the stagecoach out and about, and was gone for a considerable amount of time during that with that job.
Think of
a long road trucker these days. You know,
right.
Just a lot of travel time.
Right.
But they did have a little girl who was born in 1841, and they were frustrated with Dad being gone. Maybe that wasn't Dad. We don't know the full story. But mother and daughter tracked the absent father to St. Louis, and that's where they found him, was in St. Louis. And that young girl, she grew up there in St. Louis, became a lady of fashionable society in that town, and later she married an English lord.
Okay.
And the mistress of a superb mansion in London society. So she went back across the other way across the pond and, mm-hmm. and settled in England for a period of time. As wife, she received the honorary title of Lady.
Mm-hmm.
So she became Lady Stirling. The lord that she married was Stirling.
Is she born here in this
born
home?
In this little house,
okay.
At First and Walnut.
Okay.
And rises the ranks of English society.
Wow.
To the title of Lady. And of course the house was never really referred to as the Lady Stirling house, mm-hmm. Until mm-hmm. the history of this history of her and her rise was told in Bennett Young's 1898 history,
right.
of the county, and then again by Robin Fain in,
yes.
her 93 history of the county.
Yeah.
Just a kind of a unique little anecdote to history. It was a nondescript house, had some siding over the front. You never would have known that it was an old log cabin just looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fascinating if you can go back and find out that every house, every place has its own story.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were mentioning that this place, throughout the years after this family had it, other families had it. This house was kind of a magnet, if you will, to fire. And I didn't know this till you just told me a while ago. I mean, I remember the day that it went up in flames 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But take me back. Let's go back 50, 60 years and talk about some different occupants and things that happened to this home.
So Dr. Rice Teeter, who is a physician here in town, and mm-hmm. he had a large home at West 3rd and Maple Streets, and he decided to downsize, and many people were surprised by his decision to downsize mm-hmm. to this house at 1st and Walnut. He was a well-known history buff, and he probably had an inkling as to what the story was of, mm-hmm. of this property. Unfortunately, in the 1950s, the early 1950s, there was a fire, and Dr. Teeter succumbed to the fire, an injury sustained during that fire in that house. Mm-hmm. So that was the first known fire. There probably were, going back over a century and a half, other fires, but
it was a fire that was enough to give him injury, but it didn't burn the house down.
Did not burn the house down.
Because the best I can remember, if you look at it when it burned, you could still tell this was an old cabin, if you will. I mean, what's it called that they put between the logs, the chucking or whatever? You know what I'm talking about?
We'd call it mortar today.
Yeah.
But the old, the name is escaping.
I'm trying to remember. Couldn't you see that kind of stuff?
You could. It was not always present. In fact, an interesting story. It used to be, if you looked at the upper levels, there was clapboard and there were different types of siding over it. It was a hodgepodge of coverings over this building.
Right.
But in the summer of 1977, the Kentucky Heritage Council came through and did a survey of historic places in Nicholasville. And that's really what created the downtown district that became a nomination for the National Register of Historic Places. This property is just outside of the boundaries. And there are some notes from Frankfurt that indicate that, you know, they'd glanced at the property, but had all these coverings on it. They couldn't imagine that it had historical worth or value. So there was no further investigation done, despite the longevity of the house.
So did they basically stop at First, the east side of First, I guess?
Yeah, it stopped literally across the street.
All the way down the way, from north to south. Or is it a straight line, do you know? Or did it extend?
Have a couple of teeth to it. Of course, there was an attempt to create a historic district a few years back here in Nicholasville with some historic guidelines and different things. And that did not, that was maybe going to use some different boundaries. But this was a very consolidated area that's on the National Register.
And what's interesting, if you follow that line that we're talking about on the east side of First Street, across the street from this house, if you follow that line south, as you said, it also excluded the Metcalf House, which we talked about last week.
Correct.
So it's not into that group either.
It is not. Now, the Presbyterian Church that's on that side of First Street.
Behind the courthouse.
They did do a sawtooth there to include that property.
Why would they not have known about the Metcalf House is what's interesting.
They probably did. I don't think it went as far as Elm as Weather. And their idea is to keep a contiguous area.
Wow.
A very contiguous area.
Now, see, to me, I would understand where you would want to do that. Mm-hmm. But when you have the oldest home that has that kind of tie to Reverend Metcalf and what all he did in his connection to George Nicholas, the naming of the town and all that, you'd think they would draw their contiguous a little bit wider.
Well, there's a lot that goes into the selection of these districts.
Yeah.
And it does not mean that the house can't be preserved, and these houses should be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to remember what the National Register does. The National Register for Historic Places was something that was created in 1966 when Congress passed the National Preservation Act.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the registry does is it creates a list of all, quote, historic or archaeological relevant and important properties in the nation. Kentucky, I think, has maybe the third or fourth most sites of any state on these behind Massachusetts, Virginia, and I can't remember, maybe Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But we've got just a tremendous wealth of history here in Kentucky. What the registry does is it does not set restrictions on what you can do with your own property.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it says if federal dollars or federal permits are required for work to be performed, a highway project, those types of things, then they have to consider what the historic impact will be on historic resources in that area.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. If for some reason, because I know there was a push to do this a few years ago, if for some reason that there was another consideration where they said, okay, we're going to extend the historical section, and we're going to extend it by three streets, all different directions. What you're telling me is those private property owners within that area, and we have several homes within that area, they own their own home, it doesn't affect them in any way, basically, as far as, because I know that was part of what was talked about during that push, is that, oh, they're going to be telling me what paint I have to use, and they're going to tell me if I can put a garage on my home or something like that. Am I right here?
Well, there's two things we're talking about here. One would be a local zoning guideline, which could include those kinds of restrictions.
Right.
The second is a National Register, which does not impair a homeowner's ability to do work on their property. So you see communities oftentimes will expand the boundaries of their historic districts as they determine additional properties are worth preserving or worth including in a district.
Well, let me ask you then, because of the area that is now proclaimed the concise area, is every building within that area automatically on the National Register, or are there only certain buildings? Because the reason I ask that is I think down here on the old Walker Hotel, where Bruce Smith's office is now, across from Nicholasville Baptist Church, there's actually a plaque on the front, I think, that says on the National Historic Register.
Right.
But I know that there's not other buildings that have that. Is it just because they have a plaque and everybody else doesn't, or?
They have a plaque.
That's it.
They have a plaque. So it would include everything that's in the district. Now, for example, example, the Windstream building that's on Main Street, mm-hmm. across from the courthouse.
Where the mural is.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing architecturally significant about that. So it would be evaluated, but kind of tossed to the side. And all this, again, would only come into impact with as far as the National Register is concerned, if, for example, when they did several years ago the Main Street realignment and kind of did some work there, that would involve that kind of work. When US 68 was expanded from two lane to four lane, there was an extensive study that was done, and right now they've conducted extensive studies on what the I-75 connector or the Eastern Bypass would look like, because those are projects that are involving federal dollars.
It makes a little more sense to me now. And you know, we mentioned Nixville Baptist Church. You talk about another building with great history in our community, as a lot of you listening may maybe that are not from here may not realize that was actually a hospital in the Civil War. So just one more little bit of information that's interesting. Let's get back to the Lady Sterling House.
Sure. So there was a second fire. We mentioned the first fire back in the early 1950s, which took the life of Dr. Teeter. There was a second fire about 25 years later. Again, probably my guess is after that Kentucky survey was done in the summer of 77. So I'm thinking it was the late 70s when that fire occurred. And that was when that first floor's covering was taken off during the renovation after that fire. And as you talked about earlier, remembering seeing the log, the hewn logs, again, to think of those logs. You know, these logs were put there in 1804. They were big logs.
Yes.
So these were hewn from trees, old growth trees that probably were already 100, 200 years old when they were done. So you're looking at wood that was from maybe the 1600s that went into this house. Just you think about the richness of history. Mm-hmm. And so when the fire struck in 2014, December of 2014, the whole property was engulfed, and you could smell the smoke all through downtown.
Oh, yeah.
All through downtown Nicholasville.
Huge fire.
As somebody who's passionate about historic preservation, it was sad to see, of course, the fire and then the ensuing demolition that occurred very quickly. I think it was a matter of maybe 24, 36 hours without any attempts to perhaps preserve. Maybe some of that wood could have been repurposed. There's companies in Lexington, for example, that if you have an old horse barn or you have an old property, they can purchase that wood or take that wood and then repurpose it into flooring, into a bar wall, so different things. If you look at the Summit, that development that occurred, that's at Nicholasville and Man of War in Lexington, they've got the barn development, which is a stalls of local food vendors. There are tables inside there, and those tables are hewn from old wood that had been reclaimed and repurposed.
Cool.
So there's a tremendous amount of things that can be done. If you've got an old property on your farm or whatever, there might be things worth preserving, and it might be a way to both preserve and make a dollar.
But to explain, I guess, and we probably ought to hit a little bit on this, maybe, it's entirely up to the owner of the property of what happens with that. And I guess in this particular case, the owner just decided this is what I'm going to do, and it's my decision, and there it is.
And
there's really not a whole lot you can do about it, because now, if it had been within that historical register area, would it have made a difference?
Would not have made a difference.
Yes, he still could have done
it. It's still the
anything.
Property owner's discretion. And I think a lot of that is education and awareness of some of the opportunities that, there are companies out there that are interested in buying some of this reclaimed wood.
You know, I've actually dealt with one of those. We had an old barn that blew down behind my mother's house a few years ago, and I actually had a company come out and look at it. As it turned out, interestingly enough, the entire barn had been built out of hemlock, which is a very wide grain, and they just can't do anything with it. It's not, you know, and I was interested. Nobody in my family ever knew that. We're like, well, where in the world did they get that? And the best we can figure is that it was probably floated down river from somewhere in eastern Kentucky way back years ago. But very interesting, because, and I was excited and then disappointed, of course, that it couldn't be used for something after I found out what it possibly could have been done with it. It's very interesting how they can do things like that.
It is. And reclaiming old pieces of history, it's a fascinating way of passing things on. Last week we talked about the old Bethel Academy. And, you know, the original one that was kind of over the Kentucky River area, apparently some of the stones and the bricks that were utilized for that ended up being transported and became part of Vanderbilt University in Nashville. So, again, just some rich, fascinating history out there.
There's stuff everywhere.
How things can be preserved and reused.
And you know, you're talking about preserve. You mentioned last week about the Reverend Metcalf's will being still located at the Jessamine County Clerk's Office. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting to me in preservation, is how those things are preserved. Did you also know there's a famous marriage license in our county clerk's office?
There may be a couple. Which one are you referring to?
I'm talking about the Clemens. Did you know that?
Which?
There was a couple that got their marriage license here, but they got married in Adair County. But their license is still on file. And it's the parents of Samuel Clemens, later known as Mark Twain.
Yes. I did not.
Yes, and it is still over there. All right, well, back on subject as far as the house is concerned. The Lady Sterling House, of course, is gone, and that was our second oldest as far as we know. That I don't know what the next one is now. I don't know what the second oldest is. But there's still a lot of old homes in our community. If you go up Maple Street, there's several old homes up through there. My dad used to own one when he had his art gallery up here that was owned and built by a doctor. It's now a private home, I think, across the street from the Methodist Church parking lot, the big brick one there.
Sure.
This is just some interesting history. Maybe we can do a show on that one time. Well, Peter, you have been very kind to come in today and last week and tell us all the history that you know about these homes. But I want to ask you about yourself. What brings you to this part of the country and your interest in the history here?
Well, Doug, born in Ohio and came to Kentucky when I was in first grade.
Yeah.
Grew up in Lexington on West Short Street there in a house. The newest part was built in 1843. So it was a historic place in the western suburb down in Lexington.
Was your family history buffs? Is that why they would be drawn to something like that?
Mom and Dad always liked a project. So old houses were definitely a nonstop project.
Yeah.
So and there's a passion for history there.
Yeah.
But so lived in Lexington, grew up in Lexington, and just developed that passion for history. I started a blog called The Kentuckian, and when I finished law school, kind of a way to avoid studying for the bar exam a little bit.
Now, spell that for people, because that is reference to the way Kentucky was referred to before it was Kentucky.
Right. Kentuckian. KAINTUCKEEAN .com is the blog. And kind of goes into the stories of Kentucky's places, kind of some backstories on the people and places that make Kentucky unique. And it was just a lot of fun that I had writing that. And actually, a publisher reached out to me because of the blog, and that's what prompted Lost Lexington to be written, a book that I published a few years ago.
You're talking about Kentucky, and it seems to me the Kentuck? It was an Indian word, I think, and I think it had some bloody war ground or something.
Lot will say that it's the dark and bloody ground.
Yeah.
You know, the cane, it probably had to do a lot with the cane breaks that we had throughout Kentucky.
Yeah.
So a lot of debate over really the origin of the Kentucky name.
All right. You've got family. Tell us. Let's brag about them a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, chance.
My wife is a nurse over at UK. And we've lived in here in Nicholasville since 2004.
Okay.
And then we have three beautiful children. Gunner is over at Nicholasville Elementary.
Young kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Harper is at the Early Learning Village.
Yeah.
And then Cash is three. So.
Well, now you have told me off mic some interesting stories about Cash, his name. I want you to tell that again, but how did all these have something to do interesting with the way that Cash has come about?
Well, no, Cash is probably the most interesting as far as it's a non-family name. He was born the same year that book, my Lost Lexington book, came out. And so my wife and I were thumbing through the index, having a difficulty naming the third kid. And she said, "Oh, Cash, I like that one, named after Cassius Clay of Whitehall fame."
Yeah. Not the boxer, Cassius.
Not the boxer. Two great Cassius Clays out there in history. But Cassius Clay, of course, chose that. He was named after the Cassius Clay at Whitehall.
Yeah.
So, Henry Clay's cousin.
Well, I sure appreciate you coming in and sharing this information. And last week and this week, you know, when we originally talked, we were going to do one show and kind of talk about both. But there's so much information. And what's interesting is that we've just scratched the surface as far as the beginnings of Nicholasville and even our county. That's a whole other story. And, of course, we've done a story kind of on Wilmore and Scott Station and how that all came about. So just a lot of history in this small county we live in, and we're very proud of it and proud that you take an interest in it, too.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, my thanks to Peter Bragney for coming in the last couple of weeks and talking about some history of Nicholasville, some of its home and some of its people. We'll try to get him back again another time to talk about more history of our county. Also appreciate you coming in every morning to All Things Jessamine, 11 o'clock. We'll do it again next Saturday. Don't forget, I'm here every weekday morning from 6 to 8. Get you up and going on Jess FM 105.9.